Hi friends, we've gone through a very long journey of seven chapters of this beautiful book called The Integrative Manager. We've gone to chapter 1 to 7 and now we're concluding with this last chapter, which actually opens up a lot of things about who you are and what you can do. We learned the skills of Integrative Manager. We learned certain thoughts, some approaches. Now, for doing all this, we are actually touching upon some important aspect of you and me. Two important aspects. One is the aspect of mastery. The other one is the aspect of originality. When I do something which is taught to me by someone, I tend to become unoriginal. That is, when I master something that is learnt but taught by someone, I may become unoriginal. When I'm only original, what happens is I'm not able to relate to the things around. I may become impractical and mastery may not happen. It's possible that, you know, by being original, I may be so creative that I may really not be able to create a structure or a steps of process. I may lose out on consistency. So we are actually discussing in this chapter how the whole process of integrative management actually brings out a healthy combination of mastery and also originality. In fact, when you practice this time and again, you'll notice that your originality of your approach is coming out so well. Two people who are practicing integrative management on the same issue, if they have been doing it for a long time, you'll notice that both of them will be giving equally powerful original solutions for that issue, and both of them will have the sustaining results which integrative management and action takes. So let's get on and see what is this is offer. It's chapter 8, The Wealth of Experience. So now, the objectives is to invent future. You need to use past, your experiences. Influence of stands and tools on experience. Experience nurtures originality. Both mastery and originality are key to creative originality. The structure will be using the past, inventing the future. One part we'll be discussing. How stands and tools influence experiences. How experiences influence stands and tools in turn. Experience can deepen mastery. And then experience can nurture originality. It can make you develop your originality. And the most powerful experience is mastery combined with originality. Then the personal knowledge as a system will be wrapping it up. And then advancing experiential knowledge. And finally, we conclude with the personal knowledge system of the integrative thinker. Right? And so what we are doing is right now, we take a quotation from Pablo Picasso. He says, I'm always doing that which I cannot do in order that I may learn how to do. It's like jumping into something about which you do not know. Since I do not know this thing, I would like to do it. Since I do not know this language, I would like to learn it. Since I cannot handle this situation, I've never done it before, I want to do it. It's like challenging one's limitations. So those of us who are willing to challenge our limitations, we will realize the importance of how I may learn how to do it. If I've never done something and I keep getting fear that I will not be able to do it, or I have a fear of performance or results, what could be happening to me? I would always be scared and I would never be able to realize my potential. Practically all of us know about it, the importance of doing something which you have never done before. The learning process is all about that. You're learning integrative management. You've gone through the whole journey. Some of you would be putting it into practice. And when you put it into practice, you're getting into a new type of a thinking process which you haven't done before. And when you do that, you'll learn how to do it. And then you'll get some results. No learning goes waste. Every learning is making you unravel certain things which are already there in you, about which you're not aware, and they also teach you things about which you're totally unaware. Right? So taking it further, for the next maybe about 10 or 20 slides, I'll be talking about AJ Lafley's entire thought process, and the whole focus will be how AJ Lafley, the CEO of P&G, brought in mastery in the integrative thinking process. Milestones in his career in P&G and how this mastery led to originality. Right? So what we're doing is, let's get on with the words what's given here in bullet points. AJ Lafley, CEO P&G, was a living model of power of well-considered and well-leveraged experiences. With 33 years of vast experience with him, Lafley processed and capitalized on it to become a consummate integrative thinker. He had some varied experience. There are people who put in a number of years of experience in an organization, 15 years, 20 years or whatever. Now, after all that experience, it doesn't speak in terms of superior skill sets that are required after that many years of experience. Putting in number of years of experience is not going to really make you multi-skilled. You have to actually do something conscious so that when you say, I have 33 years of experience, every year has been a learning thing, and I have developed my thought process, I've developed my ways of acting on issues in a much more broader way. That's the reason many times we find in organizations that people are experienced, but they have become dull. They cannot think integrative. They cannot think of creative problem solving when there's a crisis. Because they have gone into the tunnel vision, they are into conventional thinking process. So although he has put in 33 years of vast experience, Lafley used every experience to learn, bring about mastery, and also bring out his originality. The most striking point was he used his experiences both to deepen his mastery and nurture his originality. Two important words in this particular chapter, mastery and originality, rather than focusing on one at the cost of the other. Both of them are two seemingly opposing thinking process. When I'm original, I am not mastering something because it's my own creation. When I'm mastering something, I tend to miss out on my original. So these two are seemingly opposite, but they aren't. If both of them are combined by you, you will realize that it's a fantastic thing to happen. Let me give an example. A person works in a bank and he's working for the last about, say, 8 or 10 years. There's a mastery of a portfolio which he's handling. Let's say he's handling personal banking. So you and I go, and he's a retail banker, he's sitting at the counter, and he transacts with us, he deals with us. Now, it could become a humdrum routine job wherein he has mastered the processes of how to deal with people. It could become a routine humdrum job wherein he has mastered how to deal with people, with customers. So after 8 or 10 years, he knows the game very well. He knows what to do and when to do, all those things he knows. Now, he could be doing it as a routine for 10 years without much of growth, without much of difference to customers who come and see him and meet him. So if I had met him 2 years back and if I meet him today, he's the same guy. What do I mean by saying this? When I have an issue today with a person, a personal banker who has 10 years experience, then I would be expecting a creative solution which is coming from his origin thinking. And let me explain how the originality comes. You see, when I'm intensively doing something and I master over it, does my comfort zone about myself improve or not? It does. So when my comfort zone improves, I'm willing to take the risk, inverted commas, of being original. I'll repeat. Whenever I do something and I get into the mastery of doing something, I go deep into it. Specialization we talked about in one of the earlier chapters, remember? So when I'm into a specialization, I'm into a mastery, I start getting a larger panorama of things and I get a richer experience. And when I get a richer experience, my confidence level goes up. People whose confidence level goes up from this path, they would find it extremely easy to express their originality. One more example comes to my mind as I'm talking to you. We know the famous painter M.F. Hussain. Mastery in painting. But because of the mastery in painting, he had his original way of looking at things. He was so original, he was willing to put his originality to the public by coming barefoot. That's something which he wanted to do perhaps. So you can come across a lot of people in life who display originality after mastery is reached. But there are a lot of people who develop mastery, but at the peak of mastery, they are not original. They are the ordinary bland managers, I call them. Two bankers in the same bank, both are having 8 to 10 years experience. One person will be remarkably original with mastery, and the other person may be just about mastery. So the important aspect to be noted is that as you grow, you need to learn, and as you learn, you develop mastery. Every other day which you are putting in your work, you need to learn something new. And then you integrate the learning with what you already know. And that's how you keep on stitching it. If that learning is absent, you're simply putting in years to your experience, but you're not actually getting much out of your mastery. When you put yourself into the mastery path, what happens? You are in a position to take it further. And as much as you take it further, at every step, there is a learning process you go through. And this learning process is one wherein you say, I'm going to do something today which I never did before. And when I do something today which I've never done before, I might succeed, I might fail. But I learn from it, and then I will try to integrate it. Now this is a skill. This is a skill which certain people consciously did. Lafley is known for that, among others. And we are discussing that right now. So what really happens is, these people are having a mastery. And after they reach mastery, then their self-expression, which is nothing but originality, is able to come out. For the simple reason that they have become extremely comfortable and they are willing to take a risk. Now, if you are allowed to make your original expression come out, isn't it the greatest thing to happen at the pinnacle of your success? But very few managers, very few leaders you get of this type. As you go up the organizational ladder, you find that people are victims of conventional thinking. They get into what is called as groupthink. They think like the group, the culture of the company. And then when there's a crisis or something happening, these people are not able to come out of the box because they have been trapped into the factory setting way of thinking. But when you have someone in the same company who's been putting a number of years of experience, and he starts integrating every experience, every day, every week, every hour, every year with his past experiences, then he starts growing in a different way. And as he grows, the magic is, the more he grows in the mastery by learning, underline learning, he is going deeper into his originality, and his originality comes out very, very clear. This is something one needs to practice to experience what I'm talking about right now, right? So taking further, Lafley started his career in 1972 when he was in Navy, stationed in Tokyo, Japan. He was suddenly asked to manage the Navy Exchange, a retail stores for servicemen located there. Although young, Lafley lacked tools or experiences. With his optimistic stance, he sought to build the exchange's business. He studied the customers intensively, seeking to understand who they were and why they were buying. Who they were and why they were buying. Okay? From the military identification cards, ID cards, the customers had to show to the shop. He collected data on which customer populations were buying what goods at what prices. He used this data to adjust his assortment and decide pricing. Anybody in his place would have just said, I am there to sell the merchandise. Let a colonel come, let a major come, let squadron leader come, let anybody come. I just give the merchandise, take the money, and then I submit my accounts. Anybody would have done that. But this gentleman went into a little probing. Who's buying what? At what pricing? What could be his requirements? It's a sort of a curiosity he was into, a natural curiosity. And this curiosity can be just curiosity for the sake of it. But in this case, he made use of that data from the various ID cards of these customers, the military personnel. And what he did was he started using the data for his own work. Using the data, he came to know what sort of consumer habits different grades of military cadets going for, based on which he put his entire merchandise in the shelves or whatever in a proper manner, so it was easy for him to locate and give it to the customers. He could also be able to decide the pricing in that case, because there are certain things which was given to him as autonomous activity, right? Only because Lafley wanted to deepen his mastery of retailing did he accumulate these particular experiences. A typical retail thinker, right? He systematically collected and mined data so that he could structure and plan his business operation to produce the outcome he sought. This is coming under a study called Consumer Buyer Behavior, in which we talk about identifying your target audience, who's your market, what sort of consumer habits they have, position your product accordingly, or create a product package accordingly, create a portfolio accordingly. So this is something which he had already done on his own from the military days, right, from the Navy days. And then what does he do further down? He repeated his experiences in structuring, focusing and planning, produced a deep understanding of the context in which his business operated and a high level of effectiveness in producing desired outcomes. Obviously, it had to happen. In other words, he consciously accumulated experiences that cultivated mastery. Like I told you earlier, number of years of experience may not create a mastery. Mastery comes when every experience is a learning experience and you integrate the experience for taking you higher. The comfort zone of a person who integrates is far more, and he has more choices. He has more stances, more tools, leading to multiple experiences. Okay? Simultaneously, Lafley also worked to build his capacity for producing novel outcomes, something absolutely new. This originality often expressed itself in Lafley's merchandising decisions. He thought original. He says, I would like to have new ways of doing things, new outcomes I would like to produce. This is something that came from within him, right? The Navy Exchange was permitted to stock small amounts of locally sourced merchandise. Lafley extended the concept of locally sourced, brought out from the same region, to import ceramic elephants, small ceramic elephants, you can, from a factory he knew of from in Vietnam. Where is US and where is Vietnam, just imagine. But he had some connections in Vietnam and he said, let's import ceramic elephants from there. And how are they importing it? Very creative way. Planes which were returning to base empty. Vietnam, there was a Vietnam war, and there were planes that were transporting people and ammunition or whatever, and they were coming back empty. He said, while they're coming back, let's put these ceramic elephants as cargo and bring it back to US. So that's something which he did. And taking it further, Lafley circulated flyers around the base advertising the elephants and displayed them in the nearby football ground. So when in the base camp, people are whiling away the time, they're playing some sports or something, he said, that's one place where I'll keep the ceramic elephants and I'll try to sell them there. And what was the outcome? The outcome was the customer's response was mind-boggling, something which nobody would have thought of. And he must have also felt that let's do it. And why did he feel let's do it? Because something told him that this will click. His original thinking, along with the years of experience, told him that this will click. So he just took it. Now, if you do not have that type of a background, then you introducing a ceramic elephant and displaying it there may not click at all. See, like I was telling in one of the earlier sessions, one of the earlier chapters, that you could build a hotel like what was done for Four Seasons. Now that Four Seasons hotel that is made, if you replicate everything what they have done, a competitor, it will not click, because it's coming from a certain thought process from where the creation has happened. That's where two integrative thinkers running the same line of business will have different approaches and they will have different types of mastery and originality. I cannot replicate and copy something which is successful unless and until I have the same thought process, similar thought process, or something which is original to me. Right? And that's exactly what happened in this case. Who would have ever thought of ceramic elephants, that too in the football ground where these guys are playing for some leisure activity or something? But it happened, it clicked. Right? So, taking it further, it's about Lafley's merchandising decisions, how he took. Now, in 1973, all of us know there was an oil crisis in US. All the oil producing nations from Middle East who were supplying crude, I mean they were supplying oil to US, they said that nothing doing, now we'll be controlling the supply. So when the oil prices went up, US, which is the biggest consumer of oil, petroleum products and petrol, they fell into a real crisis. So during that time, when informed about the pending fuel price hike, after the OPEC meeting was done in 1973, Lafley commandeered every mothballed fuel storage tank in the basis tank farm, got them cleaned by engineering corps for the free beer, and sold collected fuel at below market price for months after the fuel price hike was formally announced by the OPEC. There were the fuel tanks which are there to fill the fuel for the various aircraft that is used in the Air Force. Now these fuel tanks usually have certain amount of fuel at the bottom. Once you are emptying the fuel from a tank, a certain amount of quantity of fuel always remains inside. And for all practical purposes, you cannot really extract it. It happens in the LPG cylinders which we use at home. You know, if the cylinder is of a certain capacity, a certain amount of LPG still remains in that. So that you cannot really extract. Now what did he do? He made it a point to tell, he put his entire boys on task to tell them to try to get as much as possible oil from these tanks, from the bottom, you know, like it's like we say scrapping the bottom. And that's exactly what he did. And those and other experiences honed Lafley's originality, something which nobody would have thought of. He said, let's have it done. So what did he do? He gave them an incentive of free beer. And his entire engineering corps, the entire engineering team, they started going along and bringing it out. And not only that, they were able to sell this particular extracted fuel at a price which was lower than the hiked price in US. Right? Spontaneity, experimentation, flexibility and openness aren't terribly rare qualities in and of themselves. These are something which people do anyway. There are people who are spontaneous, there are people who do experimentation, there are people who use a lot of flexibility into their work. But it is a mark of an integrative thinker to nurture those markers of originality while at the same time deepening mastery. Whose markers, which is organization, planning, focus and repetition, are originality's seeming opposites? See, when you're into a structured way of operating and you keep on doing something again and again using the structure, you develop what is called as a mastery. So behind a mastery, there is always a certain systematic approach that gets repeated again and again. And when it gets repeated, what happens is it actually makes you get into a factory setting. Right? Now, he was in a position to do all this, that is organizing, planning, focus and repetition. At the same time, he was able to mix and match spontaneity, experimentation, flexibility. And when these two come together, structure and these human qualities of spontaneity, etc., come together, that's the time a certain spark happens. Your originality starts showing up. And how does it show up? It shows up with a lot of courage. It shows up with a lot of clarity and guts of action. Right? Lafley was consciously accumulating experiences that strengthen both capabilities, originality and mastery, not one at the expense of the other. Lafley completed Harvard Business School. He joined Harvard and then he joined P&G in 1977 and started his climb from an assistant brand manager. He continued to accumulate experiences that strengthened both ends of mastery-originality continuum. Mastery on one side, originality on the other, it's a continuum. So what he did was, he was constantly playing a ping pong, I could say, between mastery and originality, so that he doesn't lose track of either of those. And he was encashing on this. So mastery, then again apply originality. Again mastery, again apply originality. When you keep on doing this, he's integrating both of them together. Right? He continued to deepen his understanding of consumer behavior and upgraded his tools so that he continues to progress. Meanwhile, Procter & Gamble came up with a new liquid version of Tide laundry detergent. It came out with a Tide laundry detergent, a new liquid version, right? As per P&G tradition, every new product was introduced with a new brand name only. So obviously they would not expect a name like Tide. Now let's see what Lafleur did. So organization president was firmly on the side of giving the liquid detergent a new name. Lafleur saw good reasons for breaking precedent. As per P&G technical personnel, Tide powder was used for removing soil and liquid detergent and greasy and oily food. So Tide powder had one particular use and the oil had another use. But Lafleur argued that consumer doesn't know or care about this difference. That's Lafleur's thoughts, which even I may not agree totally. Because it's assumed by some of the marketeers that consumers do not really know the difference between A and B. A small difference if you make between A and B, it will not be known. Probably, keeping that particular reality about people in mind, he encased upon it. When I have a reality in front of me saying that the consumer will not know the difference between A and B, I can encash it by doing something different. And they may not notice that it's a different thing. It happens, right? So the consumer saw the new product as old reliable Tide in new liquid form. That's how they started perceiving it. The logic of Lafleur's argument prevailed, and thus liquid Tide arrived in the marketplace. Lafleur was very clear that I'm going to do it this way only, and I'm going to retain the name Tide. So liquid Tide, it arrived in the market. The results were outstanding. The size of the liquid detergent US market was more than 3 times the size of the powder detergent market. Imagine, it zoomed up. And P&G's share of liquid and powder detergents was 4 times the nearest big rival in the market. Had the liquid detergent been branded under a separate name, it is unlikely that Tide would have been an immediately recognizable brand. A 60-year-old mainstay towering over an array of brands with 21 years on the shelves. With a very large reputation of 60 plus years, it would have probably not been as successful had it been marketed with different names, the powder and the liquid. Lafleur's originality came into play when he faced another big decision about packaged laundry soap. Now we are talking about packaged laundry soap. In 1993, P&G's research group devised a way to compact the big fluffy granules of powder detergent into a form that was less than half the volume. When we buy a detergent package, either it's a carton or we buy it in a reusable package, and there's a certain amount of air in it. It's not completely full, right? Now, when there is a certain amount of bulk inside and certain amount of space inside, this particular detergent packet would occupy more of shelf space. Or when I'm packaging it for transportation, I'll be able to send less number of packets because of this particular type of a disposition. Now, if I am able to transport more number of packets, definitely I would find it to be profitable. So there, I have to come out with some method, some process by which I have a requisite amount of space inside, not too much, not too less, and I would like to compact it. When I compact it, what happens? The volume of the packaging comes down. It comes down. So when the volume of the packaging comes down, for the same quantity of detergent, I would find that I can actually transport more detergents, and that would actually be very useful. It's profitable for my company in terms of transportation, in terms of packaging, cost savings, etc. That was the concept which Lafleur brought out. So let's read it and understand it. And taking it further, boxes of the detergents would take half the space on store shelves and in shopping carts, as well as in the laundry room. The new detergent was subjected to extensive consumer testing. as was a long established practice with P&G. To nearly everybody's surprise, including Laplace, tests showed that consumers did not exhibit a strong preference for compact detergent, as it was called, despite advantages that seemed obvious to Laplace and his colleagues. You see, all integrative thinkers do not meet with success in the very first stage. I strongly think that this is going to succeed. I've done it before. So when I actually go and launch with so much of confidence, suddenly I get a surprise, a negative surprise. And this is exactly what has happened in this case. He was so sure that the compact detergent will prevail, it did not. What did he do? Did he just quit? Certainly not. The findings put the product's future in a jeopardy, in a big question mark, in a threat. P&G customarily would not launch a new product unless a rigorous quantitative consumer test had deemed it a clear winner over the product it was meant to replace. It would not do any FMCG company would not launch something like this, successful company, unless and until they've done an extensive research and they're sure about themselves. For a master of consumer understanding like Laplace, the test data should have doomed compact detergents. But the verdict didn't sit right with Laplace. He was not very happy with the outcome of this rejection of people. With his carefully nurtured capacity for originality, this is where the original thinking comes. Laplace focused on what was potentially unique about the situation that might call for a novel response from P&G. So he went on focusing, what is potentially unique about this compact detergents? He saw that unlike the majority of the product upgrades, this one had the potential for massive cost savings for retailers. So retailers would love the product, whatever consumers may think of it, and P&G would reap the same cost benefits as the retailers. Laplace decided to dive into the voluntary comments that some of the consumers added to their quantitative research forms. He went through all the research forms and then he started studying the voluntary comments made by people. The voluntaries were not statistically significant and ordinarily carried with little weight in P&G's deliberations, but not for Laplace. While consumers weren't wildly enthusiastic about the compact detergents, few were actively hostile to the idea. Just a few of them. Most of them were not very encouraged, but a few were hostile, and the people who were not encouraged did not say that it is not okay, they just left it at that. So there weren't much of hostility or a rejection. At least more than 80% of the voluntaries cited at least one positive thing about the compact product. So he got actually grassroots data. He got information from the consumers one-to-one. And when he went through the entire market research papers, the answers in the questionnaires, he found that everybody had something good to say about the compact detergent packaging. So after all, people had not rejected it. There was something good about it which they perceived, right? So Laplace summarized, retailers saw compact detergents as a big win because it was very cost effective for them. So did P&G's manufacturing and logistics and operations. Consumers were neutral at worst. Laplace argued for all powdered detergents to compact, an appropriation that required $250 million, a cost involved. He said, all the powders we are making, let's compact them. He came out with a decision. It turned out to be a big win for P&G. We ran and we won the race, Laplace says. It was huge, absolutely huge. Laplace's accumulated mastery and originality gave him the confidence to take risk. This success would not have been possible with mastery or originality alone. It was a healthy blend, a mixing and matching of originality and mastery. Laplace depended on his mastery to understand real meaning of voluntaries and how retailers would react. What would be the impact on P&G manufacturing and distribution? Without mastery, Laplace's originality would not have withstood the rigors of the real world. Laplace's success in packaged soap earned him 1994 a promotion to the position of president of P&G's Asia Pacific region. He headed back to Japan. By now, he had amassed years of experience as a P&G executive, bringing his mastery and originality to bear on opportunities and problems. Further, he had also become highly skilled with the tools of consumer understanding and competitive strategy. As his capacities expanded, they reinforced his stance as an executive, able to convert challenges, complexities and contradictions into creative resolutions. In Japan, P&G, which dominated its home market in the United States, was disappointingly second or third in the rank to many business lines. Lafley exercised his mastery to establish marketing and selling discipline and build P&G business in an orderly process. He didn't give up. He said, let's wait, let's study the whole thing, let's study the panorama. And he went using his personal mastery as well as his originality. At the same time, he gave his originality a workout. It happened like this. When P&G launched concentrated Joy Dish Liquid, their product, against the twin dominant Japanese players, each of them had 40% of the market share. That means Joy Dish Liquid had only 20%. The convention in the marketplace was to sell dish soap in large bottles of relatively dilute soap. Large bottles with diluted soap so that you can just quickly use it. That was a convention that was being practiced those days. Now let's see what Lafley did. P&G had figured out how to concentrate about 3 times the amount of soap into the same volume, allowing the product to be packaged in much more compact bottles. Instead of giving diluted packages, diluted product, let's give concentrates, and that too in a compact package. Somewhere that compact part of it was a major, obsession or something which was original thinking from his side. And he stuck to that same thing of compact, even in this case, Joy Liquid, right? In the UK and Germany, the launch of this product was miserable against the well-entrenched competition. So Lafley had to be wary, he had to be careful.